early Regent Johnson. And also, thank you very much for being the first interview. I know that's always a difficult spot to fill. So I think you've been through this process before, so we'll turn it over to you to for opening comments. We would encourage 3 to 5 minutes, and then we will just open a question and answer period. And if there's time for a closing remarks, that you're open to do that as well. So we'll turn it over to you, Regent Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, members of the RCAC committee, for volunteering your time to make a selection and move candidates forward to the Senate and House Higher Education Committee for what I consider one of the most important tasks that citizens have, and that is naming regents to the University of Minnesota. To be a regent, which I have been for 12 years, in one simple term for me is governance. Understand what governance is. Governance is listening. Governance is listening, talking to your colleagues, listening to your constituents, listening to donors, listening to faculty, listening to students. It's listening, talking with other regents, and then begin to strategize, make a decision, and once the decision is made, turn that over to the administration for the implementation of that policy. Over the years that I have been on different boards, and I will discuss that briefly, that is one of the issues that I think is very important and so important in the Board of Regents. Governance, setting policy, letting the administration manage those policies. If you don't like those policies, then privately go to the president or senior administration to say, we need to talk about these policies. But governance is extremely important in setting the stage. It's important at the University of Minnesota. You perhaps know this, but let me just describe to you the University of Minnesota. It's one of the largest enterprises in this state by way of employment. It has a $4.2 billion operating budget, 65,000 students. By most accounts, it is within the 10th largest university in the United States. It has 18,000 faculty and staff, and by most accounts, ranks in the top 10 colleges and universities in this nation. I say so often, we as Minnesotans have every right to be proud of the University of Minnesota. And I would tell you, as a regent of 12 years, I've been humbled and honored to serve as a regent. Now, one of the questions that you asked is, what are your qualifications? Let me just describe those briefly, and I've handed out a sheet of paper. I sent an email to you, and I provided a hard copy to you this morning. Over a lifetime, I've been a parish pastor at Calvary Lutheran Church in Wilmer, a congregation of 2,200 people. I am not the lead pastor. I've always been an associate pastor and with prescribed duties. I served 38 years in the Minnesota Army National Guard, finishing my career at the National Guard Bureau in Washington, D.C., where we worked with chaplains across the nation with 180 denominations. And I learned much about denominational differences and respect for those cultures across America. Most recently, I was reelected to a third term to a Southern Minnesota sugar beet co-op, 500 farmers representing 17 counties in west central Minnesota. It's the third largest sugar beet co-op in the nation. It's a $500 million enterprise. I serve as one of the three outside directors with 12 growers. Also, I just finished my time on Bethesda Homes Board, a long-term care facility in Wilmer, of 240 beds. It's a $25 million enterprise. We just completed another $3 million fundraising effort, which I was the chair of that endeavor. So life experiences in governance have been over the past 40 years, and of course, most recently as a member of the Board of Regents. So what are some accomplishments that have been, and I never like to use the word I, because no one regent. It is a collective effort by 12 regents after discourse and discussion. But I'd like to point out some things. Over the last 7 years, tuition has been held to less than 1% per year over the last 7 years. We've reduced administrative costs, reallocated $90 million from administration over to academics. The four-year graduation rate continues to increase. 71% of our students now graduate in a four-year period. Student debt continues to be reduced. 44% of this graduating class had no debt. And those that had debt, the average was $27,000, and that continues to decrease as well. The desire to become a Minnesota Gopher or a student at Duluth and Morris and Crookston is highly competitive. We had 52,000 applications. At the Minneapolis campus, we're only able to take about 7,000 students. So you can see that there's great competition. So what about the other campuses? During my time as chair of the facilities committee, we built a new dormitory at Crookston and a new wellness center. Duluth, we just opened up the new chemistry and engineering building. Morris, a new dormitory. Rochester just acquired land for expansion. Certainly at St. Paul, the Bell Museum. And the Minneapolis campus, we have the renovation of Pioneer Hall, also the new Athletes Village and other facilities. One of the major issues that regents, current regents, and I as the past chair 2 years ago we worked on is the integration and consolidation of Fairview, 650 physicians, as well as the medical school. We think this is going to be absolutely a model in academic medicine across America, and the hopes will be that about $50 million more of revenue from this enterprise will come into the medical school and begin to raise our standards and standing in the medical community. The Biomedical Discovery District is without argument one of the finest in America. By the national ranking of Center for Performance, the University of Minnesota ranks in the top 10 in all the categories that were assessed. And finally, we just completed the hiring of a new president over the last 5 months, and Joan Gable, currently the provost at South Carolina, will begin her duties on July 1st. So what about the university going forward? There are visions, there's challenges, certainly, that we have. Let me just offer a few of those for you. One, we need to be more diverse. Diverse in faculty, diverse in staff, diverse in the student population. So you say to me, you can ask me, well, Dean, what do you know about diversity? I referenced, if you will, my time in the military, but most pointedly at Bethesda Homes in Wilmer, we have a diverse population. And we intentionally, in our employment at Bethesda, which employs over 500 people, we now have 17% unemployment from the minority population. We also provide scholarships for those individuals if they so choose to go to Ridgewater College to continue their education. So diversity is very important in my mind. Tuition. We hear oftentimes about tuition, as I referenced. We have held tuition to less than 1% over the last 7 years, and that is high on our agenda. We look at the professional schools, medical school, veterinary school, school of dentistry. If you visit with any of those folks, one of the things they will tell you is the debt. It is substantial. We, going forward, need to pay more attention to the debt that our professional students. For instance, veterinary medicine, I believe it's $220,000. Medical schools, $200,000. And that is a tremendous amount of debt going forward. We need to continue to cultivate our relationship with members of the legislature, both sides of the aisle, House and the Senate. At the peak time during my time in the state Senate, where I served for 24 years and four in the House, we received 46% of the university's operating monies from the state of Minnesota. Today, that number is 17 or 18%. We would like to reverse that trend and build back the relationship with the legislature and with within a couple hours, Governor Walz, not Governor-elect Walz, who I happen to serve in the Minnesota Army National Guard with for some years and have known Congressman, Sergeant Major, and now Governor Walz. So In conclusion, let me say this, Mr. Chairman, members of RCAC, to be a regent is an honor and a privilege. It takes a lot of hard work and dedication. I would tell you that I'm seeking another term because I'm honored, but I also have the passion to continue. Over the last 12 years, I missed one meeting, committee meeting and board meeting, and that was due to illness. You have to commit to serve and do your homework. I go back to where I started. Governance and policy is a matter for the regents. Management and administration is for the president, senior leadership, and for the chancellors. And we need to pay attention. So it is with a spirit of respect that I have for Dr. Brunix, who I first served with as president, and now Dr. Kaler, who will be leaving the presidency, and for the people of Minnesota that I have proudly and respectfully served as regent. And I'm asking you respectfully for your support and to move forward to the House and Senate Higher Ed Committee. The task is challenging, but it is a great honor to serve and to steward one of the greatest universities in our country and perhaps in the world. And as a regent, I pledge to continue my dedication and effort and hard work to make a difference for students across the wide spectrum of the University of Minnesota at Crookston, Duluth, Morris, Rochester, St. Paul, and Minneapolis. Mr. Chairman, I thank you, and we happy to have some discourse and questions.
Thank you. I will. I'll start off with a question about the university's land grant mission. The University of Minnesota is obviously our state's land grant university. What does that mean to you, and what do you think that should mean to the people of Minnesota?
The land grant mission is extraordinarily important. And looking back over the history of the land grant, it came about following the Civil War when Abraham Lincoln said we need to heal this country. And one of the ways of doing that is he asked the respective states to set aside land so that you could build a university, and thus the University of Minnesota, Iowa State, Kansas State, so on and so forth. Land grant means to me academics, it means research and outreach on behalf of the people of Minnesota. The University of Minnesota continues to improve in its academics and also in its research capacity, which differentiates us from other colleges and universities. Our research budget has increased over 30% in the last 4 years. And the research that is done in the various colleges and the professional schools is absolutely stellar. And then we take that information and we share it with the people of Minnesota, the people of the country, whether it's in veterinary medicine, in human medicine, in human development, whatever. It's academics, the research, and sharing it, if you will, to the best of our ability with the world.
Thank you. Councilmember Hipsch.
Thank you, Regent Johnson, and thank you for 12 years of service to the regents and 2 years as chair. One of the custom kind of practices of past regents is kind of serving two terms but not looking for a third term. I know there have been, I can think of maybe one exception in the recent past for extraordinary circumstance, but can you share a little bit of kind of why you're interested in a third term and, you know, what specifically you'd like to be focused on that you might not have had a chance to accomplish in the first two?
Number one, I look back over the history of the regents, and there was one regent way back when served 30 years, and I'm not seeking to serve 30 years, and he was a very good regent. Second of all, my former colleague, Regent Patty Simmons, served part of a third-year term. You are correct. The tradition, if you will, but not the law or the policy, is to serve one or two terms. Number one, what has excited me about a third term is working with the new president, Joan Gable. I've had opportunities to be in the room with her as regents, had a small bit of time to meet with her personally, and her vision about the University of Minnesota. That is number one. Number two is I love the University of Minnesota and all that it does for the people of this state in economics and academics and research. And I'm in a place in life that I have the time and simply want to continue. Thirdly, Our board, if you do the math currently, is a fairly young board. And I think that boards that have a variety of experiences, a variety of time serving on the board is a good thing. And not that a senior member knows more than somebody who's newly elected, but I think to help in the transition of a new administration and to work with my current colleagues would also be helpful to move the university forward. Fourthly, I have a good, healthy relationship with the members of the legislature. I don't know all of them because there's new members and have met some of them, but I also would say I have a good relationship with donors and many alumni, and it's a business of relationships, and then to move, again, the university forward under that banner.
Thank you. Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Regent Johnson. Few people that I can say that we've spent a time in a plane that got hit by lightning. So thank you for your service to the country and to the state and to the university. I was going to ask a little bit about the third term, but let me ask, from 28 years serving the legislature, can you explain from your perspective the role of the legislature with the university, and maybe how your perspective has changed from being a legislator to being a regent? And then second question would be, how would you go about continuing relationships or building relationships with legislators in the administration?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator Anderson. First of all, the joint session of the legislature that will convene to elect regents is the only joint session the Minnesota legislature has. You meet to receive the governor's budget. You may meet on other occasions, but it's the only time the legislature meets to make a decision and cast votes. And that is a constitutional authority given to you. And once those votes are cast, then a person is now a regent at the University of Minnesota. Interesting enough, the University of Minnesota is older than the state of Minnesota. And it has its own constitution, which brings about the interesting discussion item of autonomy. At what point in time can the legislature say to the regents, here's what we want you to do? And I could cite for you some of those examples if you want. I'll give you one that my former colleagues, Representative Al Junkie and Representative Tom Rukavina, who I'll just say publicly is not doing well with his health. In your own way, remember Tom, okay, at this point in time. They decided that at a new football stadium, why should the people in the suites be able to indulge in alcoholic beverages and everyone else sitting down below could not? They introduced and passed a law that said everyone in the stadium has a right to alcoholic beverages. We as regents said, wait a minute, they're imposing the will of the legislature onto the regions. And Dr. Brunick said to me, Dean, what do you think we ought to do? I said, let it be. Let's just let this be. It's not worth fighting this particular thing. So the relationship, Senator Anderson, is about funding. And that funding comes by way of request in bonding and the general fund that the president, by way of the regents, have discussed and we have passed, and we've said to the president, go to the legislature, go to the governor, ask for X number of dollars. Now, you can ask, but it takes good quality relationships on the part of the administration to sit down with folks like you, Representative Bernardi, Representative Nornes, Representative Clausen, and others, and the leadership to convince the legislature that the university will use this money to the best extent possible. You heard me quote the statistics, 17% now, it was at 42%. We've had to make it up with cost cutting or tuition increases or other kinds of things from the foundation. You raise a very interesting question, and it's this. Who on the Board of Regents should come to the legislature? I've always believed this. First of all, the president and the CFO Mr. Kramer of Government Relations. If a board member were to come here, I believe it ought to be the chair of the board. And that is Chair Dave McMillan at the present time to speak on behalf of the board. It's just a discipline that I think works better. Does that preclude other members of the board from visiting with their members of the legislature? For instance, Representative Dave Baker from Wilmer is a friend of mine. I see him from time to time. We talk about the university. That's kind of unofficial. But official capacity, I think the president, administration, the chair of the board ought to come before the legislature and make their requests in a unified message. Yes, there's autonomy, Senator Anderson, but we respect that autonomy because you have part of the checkbook, a $4.2 billion that we have to raise. So I'll conclude with this. It's called relationship. And that is a relationship that you as legislative leaders have with the administration and with the Board of Regents.
Councilmember Rogers.
Thank you. Mr. Johnson, I noticed from the sheet that you gave to us that you have been a parish pastor for the same place for 46 years. That's got to be a world record.
But that's what people in Wilmer think, too.
That's not my question. You know, 12 years as a regent, and if we're to believe what we see in the media frequently, that you've had some challenges over these 12 years. What would you list as, I'm going to make this kind of a two-part question. First of all, what would you consider during that time to be your most difficult challenge to deal with? And how would you speculate that the board, or more specifically yourself, could have dealt with it differently?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Rogers, a very fair question. There were a number challenges that came by way of the university, and the one that comes to mind was that day after the football game in September. That was not an easy time. It involved 10 of our students, and I'm not sure, looking back, the university handled that in the best way, both administratively as well as regents. To that point, I believe that when you have a crisis, whatever it may be, could be with a student, could be with an athlete, could be with a faculty member, you have the best thing to do is seek legal counsel. In our case, Mr. Doug Peterson, who is absolutely stellar. Legal counsel provides to the president, in this case, the athletic director, guidance. Where we stumbled is there were too many people that got their fingers into the pie and offered comments about what ought to happen to these student athletes. And what you do is you have a plan for crisis management. When these kinds of things happen, who's going to speak, who do you talk to, and so on and so forth. That caused some sleepless nights, Mr. Rogers, Mr. Chairman. We learned some lessons in that regard about crisis management, but have what I would call one spokesperson on behalf of the university. The students themselves, there's a couple still in school, many of them have left school. There could be pending litigation. I don't know that at the present time. But that's just an example that probably received the most attention. We have other situations, too. I'm on the litigation committee, 6 of the 12 regents. By law, we can close the meetings. We have good information from legal folks about various cases. Many organizations, people like to sue the university. You know, they see it as a possibility of gaining some resources. In the annual report this year, I think I'm fairly accurate, 97% of litigants against the University of Minnesota did not win. We do not pay out very much money in those cases. So we have a wonderful legal counsel. To the question, rely on legal counsel, let president, athletic director, or maybe it's the provost, speak on behalf of the university. Again, I'm going back to the basic fundamentals. We're governance. We set the policy. Administration and management take care of it.
Thank you.
Councilmember Carlson.
A follow-up to what Jerry asked you. During the time you were chair and immediate past chair of the Regents, there were numerous governance issues that related to the board themselves, and you brought up the one case. But the others were a regent had leaked personnel information to the press, and you did a very expensive investigation. Another, an individual regent came to the state legislature and proposed eliminating the RCAC. Yet another one, it's common knowledge, at least in the community, that an individual regent who did not serve on the search committee was calling people who weren't interviewed and asking if they could put their name in nomination. All those happened on your watch. Is it time to pass the mantle to new voices with new ideas to improve the governance of the regions?
Ms. Chairman, Ms. Carlson, thank you for the question. You're exactly right. The things that you spoke of did happen during my time as chair. First of all, we as a Board of Regents do not have the authority to remove a regent. It is only the legislature that can convene and remove a regent, or I expect there could be a court action. I'm not sure of that, but the legislature would have to meet, say, we meet for the purpose of, okay. On those three situations, Ms. Carlson, I personally visited at length with those individuals, asked them not to do what they were doing. I had Dave McMillan, who is an attorney from Duluth, was our vice chair. Dave was part of those discussions. And we asked them respectfully that this kind of activity was not helpful in a matter of governance. To the point, should there be new voices? There's always room for new voices. But there's also room for people who've had experiences in transition.
Follow up, please. At the December Regents meeting, your governance committee specifically spoke to numerous problems with the governance, and I won't list them all, but one of them was removal of regents, and I believe that was something even that you brought up. And the chair of the committee, who is not chair of the board, that's important to say, said to you, you needed to stay on topic because he put removal policy into high crimes and misdemeanors. If you were to continue as a regent, would you take the leadership in clarifying how a regent could be removed?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Ms. Carlson. We did this under Dave McMillan's leadership create the governance committee. It's the first time we've had that to look at these very issues, the ethics and the policies and procedures, and we are looking forward to continuing that work. You asked me specifically would I take the lead. I would not be the chair, you know, next time around certainly, but I certainly have a very much of an interest in the behavior of the Board of Regents, as collective as also as individuals. When you finally boil it all down, each of us are responsible for our own actions. I can't tell you how to behave, nor you tell me how to behave, but it does reflect on the University of Minnesota. No doubt about it. And Ms. Carlson, I will tell you, there was times I was embarrassed. I was embarrassed by what was happening. And you can go to my colleagues, my 11 colleagues, who I have a great deal of respect for, and you can ask them if I was respectful toward them in a private way. I did not publicly embarrass them, but I asked them in a most genuine way, are you sure is this what we want to do and how we want to proceed? I'm a firm believer you encourage and praise publicly and you try to correct some kind of action privately. And I think we've made some headway, but we do not have a policy at the present time, because if the policy could be overshadowed by actions of the legislature and say you're taking our authority away to appoint regents. What we could do, and I've thought about this, is ask our staff to look at other states, what they do. Now, I think most of you know in the Big Ten, Minnesota is the only way, the way we elect the regents, the legislature. The other 12 schools of the Big Ten, the governor appoints, Senate confirms. Other than Nebraska, they have a statewide election like you would run for the state Senate. Now, other institutions are peer institutions. I think there's kind of a self-appointing that goes on. The governor's certainly involved. In Minnesota, the governor has no authority, if you will, in the appointing process of regents. Ms. Carlson, I hear you loudly and clearly. It's like, clean up your act. We've tried. We've talked. We've visited. I would tell you this without violating confidentiality. I did, as chair, in one individual, how do I say this respectfully? Say, you can't keep doing what you're doing, and if you do, I'll remove you from your current position within the board. Okay.
Oh, thank you for answering, Ken.
Yeah. Thank you.
Vice Chair Taylor, next on the list.
Regent Johnson, I'm familiar with the Southern Minnesota Beet Sugar Co-op. A gentleman I worked with for many years, Al Ritocco, was president, an untimely death of a heart attack. But tell us a little bit about how experience on a for-profit business, the unique co-op nature of it, helps to inform your work as a regent.
Southern Minnesota Beet Sugar Co-op, as I stated, is 500 farmers in 17 counties. They raise sugar beets, process sugar beets to plant at Renville, Minnesota. Their bylaws call for 12 growers who are the investors, and then three outside directors. The other two outside directors happen to be retired CFOs from fairly large ag commodity groups here in the metro area, and myself. I was asked 7 years ago, because I've served two three-year terms, and I was just reelected by the membership in December, to serve on the board in specific areas of, you know, to bring about some, if you will, political knowledge in environmental issues, political issues, tax issues, and out of that we bring the board down here once a year for a day on the Capitol. As I stated, it's a $500 million enterprise. They have said from day one, we as farmers think like this. We want you to think more globally, more strategically about this enterprise. What are we doing right? What are we doing wrong? What's our public relations? And those kind of matters. So it's governance, because as there's 15 members of the board, we have equal vote. And they have a governance committee. I've served on the governance committee as well as their political committee over the last few years. It's a different kind of governance, Mr. Taylor, but it's still governance. And here's how it is. Mr. Steve Dom is the CEO and president. Very sharp. And we have the same kind of discussions in that boardroom as we do on the Board of Regents. And the discussions are, what should we set as policy and turn those policies over to Mr. Dom and his senior staff to implement? And it's when a director, a farmer, decides to show up at the co-op on Monday morning and said, you know, the board made the decision, I'm not sure I like that. That is not appropriate. And we talk about that every board meeting. You have crossed the line. It's not appropriate for a regent, if I call, show up in the locker room and say to the coach, or in the case of, we get calls quite often about, you know, my son or daughter or grandchild wants to attend the University of Minnesota, what can you do for me? Here's what we can do. Number one, you don't want to get involved, because there's a regent in Illinois that got in trouble. What we do is we turn that request over to our board office, and we ask them if they would contact the admissions and give an update back to the candidate who wants to receive admission to the state of University of Minnesota. I'm trying to demonstrate this line of governance and policy versus that of administration, and I feel very strongly about it.
Thank you.
Senator Clausen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Regent, I'd like to join in others in saying thank you for your public service that over the years in a number of different capacities, so thank you. A question I have is one that's been discussed at the legislature, and Minnesota is one of 13 states that has an out-migration of students. In other words, every year when we look at the number of students who are graduating from our high schools that leave the state for higher education, and you look at the number that are coming in, we lose between 700 and 7,500 students. We have no idea how many of those students ever come back to us, although we're working on that, trying to get a number. We do know of the students that come to us from other states, about 30% will stay in the state. As a former high school principal for over 15 years, I would track our top 10 students, and these are, you know, suburban district, highly intelligent, highly skilled students would leave our state for other institutions. Question I have, and I know this has been debated because you've been playing with the tuition of the outstate. At one time, I think Minnesota was one of the lowest, and every year you've been increasing it. And I know that's also cut down on the number of applicants that we've been receiving from other states. So my question is this a concern to the Board of Regents? And secondly, what have you done about that? What would you intend in the future to do about this situation?
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Senator Clausen. A bit of demographics, if you will, of the university, of the 65,000 students, 65% are from Minnesota. These are round numbers. About 7% are international students. The majority would come from California, Illinois, and the Washington, D.C. area. And there's a scattering of others, but that's the bulk. Now, what do we do about it? I think we have room, certainly at the St. Paul campus and the College of Food Science and CFANS, for more students. And one of the things I have said in here in the documents for further expansion and development of the St. Paul campus, we have the room, we have student capacity, and it has to do with agriculture, natural resources, and food, which is primary in this state. Without calculations, I am sure that we could add 200 to 300 more students. Now, that would involve some faculty, but we have the space, and we have a 10-year plan on the table in the Board of Regents to do some reconditioning, rehabilitation at the St. Paul campus, due in part to more students. Number two, Crookston, Morris, and Duluth, and Rochester all could use more students. Now, how do you attract more students to these venues? One of the things we have done this past year, we did not raise tuition at those four campuses. We held it flat. Do you do even more? You lower the tuition, you try to provide more scholarship opportunities. And thirdly, there are Regent colleagues of mine that believe that if you finish in the top 10 of your graduating class in Minnesota High School, you ought to gain admittance to the University of Minnesota. I don't know the numbers of that, but we'd have a tremendous number of students. Finally, we have about 2,500 to 3,000 transfer students a year coming into Minnesota. If you were to look at the demographics of metropolitan schools, you would see those that were not admitted to the University of Minnesota, the majority of them went to Iowa State. Iowa State transfers the number one place where transfer students come into Minnesota. For whatever reason, Mr. Chairman, Senator Claus, I do not know this answer. Why is it easier to transfer into the University of Minnesota than to be admitted as a freshman? I do not know the answer. Ms. Dirksen, sitting behind me, is on our staff, and she probably knows the answer, and she probably could tell you, and she probably will later, but I don't know. But it's an issue.
It's not on our agenda, but we can add her.
So the point is, more Minnesota students, and I think that the taxpayers and legislature tells us that. Could we go to 70%? That would mean reduction of some other place. Or the begging and ultimate question, Mr. Chairman, Senator Claussen, is how big should the University of Minnesota be in a number of students, undergrad and professional students? I think we're, by most accounts, in the top 10 number of students in the nation. University of Texas, California, Ohio State are some of our peer groups, and we have talked and wrestled with that question. I think someone told me that the Wayzata School District, there was a couple hundred that applied to the University of Minnesota. Senator Anderson, it's your area. I don't know how many got in. Wilmer, they graduated about 300. I know that 19 applied and 10 got in. Little town west of us, Kirkhove and Murdoch Sundberg, 3 applied, 3 got in. So it is an issue, but I think we can grow some of these St. Paul campus and certainly our campuses throughout the state. And they need more students. They really do. And we have talked extensively about that. Now, is the average ACT test is score is 28.3. That has continued to increase each year. So we wrestle with, if your son or daughter or grandchild is at a 26 and they've got a 3.9 GPA, they're singing the choir, playing the band, member of the 4-H club, and he didn't get in, why is that? Well, we look at references. We don't. Admissions do. But there are certainly qualified students who have not gained entrance. So my simple answer is we can grow in certain areas, and I think we ought to, especially in that ag sector, food and natural resources over in the St. Paul campus. Very much so.
Councilmember Farrell.
You just said references, which makes me want to ask you a question. The references are important and valued part of this process as well. A couple of questions. One of your references, when asked about observing you as a strategic thinker, said they didn't have experience with being able to comment on that. Asked about you in governance, said, nope, don't know about that either. I would imagine 26 years in the legislature, 12 years on the Board of Regents, having served as the chairman of the Board of Regents, that your Rolodex of possible references is vast. Why would you choose reference that you know doesn't know that about you?
Mr. Chair, Ms. Farrell, when you start to look at references, every one of us in this room can find some folks who are going to say some very positive things about us. I think we all have 3 or 4 friends that would do that. I actually thought, I'm serious, about asking someone who is a custodian to be a reference. And I'll tell you why. My life experiences are anyone who's in a leadership position, how you treat people across a wide spectrum of life is very important. How you treat the custodian in your workplace, how you treat your fellow workers, how you treat everyone. I know who you're speaking of. The gentleman is my insurance agent. Okay? I play golf with him. I do business with him. Occasionally we have lunch. He knows me better than my own brother. And why I chose him is he's absolutely one of the most honest people I've ever met. And he would tell you exactly.
He would tell you if Dean Johnson cheated at golf. He would tell you if I didn't pay my premiums. He would tell you. That's why I chose him to be one of my references.
Councilmember Rogers.
Regent Johnson, I'm going to ask a question about the Academic Health Center. Actually, myself have been a product of that institution. And looking back 20 years plus ago, the rankings of our medical school was considered one of the highest in the country. No longer is that the case. You mentioned the affiliation with Fairview. How do you think that is going to improve the standing of our school? And why is this going to be a new model in medical education?
When I look at healthcare in the state of Minnesota, we essentially look at Mayo, Sentia, and Duluth. We have Sanford, and we have Center Care out of Duluth, or out of St. Cloud, which now includes Wilmer, Redwood Falls. You have five or six kind of major hubs. The affiliation with Fairview, and it's been a long time coming with the Fairview Board, and thanks to their new CEO, and thanks to Dr. Toller, our new Dean of the Academic Medicine Medical School. These two gentlemen, along with the boards, were able, after literally years of trying to bring 650 doctors, all the Fairview, the hospitals, the long-term care facilities, and the medical school under the same page, aligning a common goal and mission. The simple answer is, our hopes are that the Fairview system, under the new realignment, will somehow be able to provide, I'm going to say, $40 to $50 million more of financial resources into the medical school. And that is going to attract more faculty. Hopefully, it will be able to set aside some of the debt that the doctors will have when they graduate. And by the way, 70% of doctors in Minnesota a graduate of the University of Minnesota. And that number percentage is even higher in greater Minnesota than it is statewide. So it's resourcing that we believe in this new affiliation is going to be helpful. And these two gentlemen, Mr. Herford and Dr. Toller, were key, along with President Kaler, Regent Chair of the Board, Dave McMillan, and others. They worked to get this together, and the board, ultimately, we approved the agreement in October, Sarah? September? It was just this past fall. And so things should move forward. Now, one of the questions that we need to wrestle with is the hospital. Some of you are involved in health care. You know about hospitals. There's that age-old question. How many hospital beds do we need? Do we need more? Do we need less? You know, should we have in the hospital and into rehabilitation centers? Fairview Hospital used to be owned by the university. And then it was, Fairview took it over some years ago, and now we're back in the mix again. Hospitals need to be updated, and how that's going to move forward will be dependent upon how this new affiliation. We have a new clinic, $200 million clinic, just off here in Boulevard, which has worked very, very well. And if you notice, there's vacant land there right off here, and potentially could be a site of a new hospital. I don't know that, but it has been discussed. By the way, talk about construction. At any given time, University of Minnesota, there's over $250 million of new construction ongoing or rehabilitation. The largest one we have now is Pioneer Hall, which we're spending about $120 million of rehabilitation. It's going to be beautiful. It's called for 2,800 freshman students coming this fall. And Tate Hall, Mr. Taylor was involved very aggressively in the funding of Pillsbury Hall. We have the new Athletes Village. We have a new track. I reference other campuses too. So let me
say, as long as I'm talking money, the balance sheet, the University of Minnesota is very strong. It's very strong right now. And through the good work of Brian Burnett, our chief financial officer, we are in good position. We tell Brian, don't let us spend money we don't have. Be responsible. And he has kept us on task. Brian Burnett is one of the finest people I've ever worked with as a CFO. He's good. And if you need more information, the details, I invite you to get a hold of Brian Burnett, who came to us from the University of Missouri and the University of Colorado. But our balance sheet is good.
I think we are out of time, but we'll let you... Did you have one more?
Just one real quick.
One more. Okay. One more question, then...
Thank you, Chair. Regent Johnson, the state of Minnesota has two major higher ed public institutions in U of M and in Minnesota State. Can you talk a little bit about how you partner with each other to set a vision for where higher ed should be in the state of Minnesota?
Higher ed in Minnesota is extremely important to our citizens. If my calculations are correct, with private and public schools, we have close to 70 campuses. Five or six, of course, University of Minnesota. Then you have the private colleges, Augsburg, Concordia, St. Olaf's, so on and so forth. The rest are part of the MNSCU system, which has approximately 400, 425,000 students in the various communities. I'll say this is what I understand. The University of Minnesota is a research academic institution. That is our primary function in the state of Minnesota, research academic institution. Is there research that occurs in the MNSCU system? Yes, but to a lesser degree. They're in the communities. They're the former community colleges. They're the technical schools. And by the way, there's one of the greatest needs we have in Minnesota is the workforce, people who are educated in the trades. And that can be served by the MNSCU system. That's not the function of the University of Minnesota. There is some alignment, but we have different missions in this state. And there's always the competing dollars in the legislature, you know, for MNSCU. And we both belong, but we have different, unique goals and objectives to educate our citizens.
So we are out of time, but if you'd like to make a closing comment.
Mr. Chairman, I think we've covered the waterfront. I appreciate your time and your questions, your discourse. I have been busily visiting with a number of legislators, donors, alumni, and I'm going to continue to work at this. But I would appreciate your support, your vote, to advance me to the higher ed committees for further discussion and discourse in this process. So I thank you very much for your time and for your efforts, and I'm honored to be here this morning with you.
Thank you very much. Thank you for coming in, and thank you for your service.
Thank you.